You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Spengola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spengola. I'm broadcasting from the Chicago suburbs. I just remembered I forgot to turn off my ceiling fan, which I will do at the first break. Anyway, thanks for joining me today on RBN. Their website is republicbroadcasting.org. You may view the guest lineup for this program by visiting Spengola.com. Just click on the radio schedule button on the left. Please also visit screeningsandyhook.net for my articles regarding Sandy Hook and related topics. I have uploaded a couple of articles in the past 3 weeks. I also uploaded a new page on my website. If you click on the button on the right-hand side, Leaving the Cult. I hope that you will also visit and subscribe to SpengolaSpeaks.net, created by dear friend and listener. One may listen to the audio files of my programs there at SpengolaSpeaks.net, as well as to the RBN archives. Another option is Wooly's blog, and that's wooliesblog.blogspot.com. If you appreciate the RBN programming, please consider donating to the network. You can do that one of three ways. To donate by phone, just dial 800-724-2719. You may visit republicbroadcasting.org and click donate, or you can send donations to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. You can email questions or comments to comment@spengola.email. There's no more spengola.com as far as email is concerned. Again, that is comment@spengola.email. Join others in the chat room by clicking on the chat room button on my website or by visiting spengola.chatango.com. We do have a temporary phone number to have you call in, but we won't be taking calls until we open the phone lines, but that number is 512-716-1603. My guest, the first 2 hours today, is David Schurter, S-H-U-R-T-E-R. He is the author of Rabbit Hole, A Satanic Ritual Abuse Survivor's Story. His website is davidschurter.com. Welcome, Dave. Dave, you there? Do we have Dave? Oh, I thought you said that he called in. Okay, anyway, our first guest today is David Schurter. And I had him on a couple months ago, 3 or 4 months ago. It was a very traumatic television program. It was a very traumatic radio program. I was traumatized because, well, we just don't hear enough about this particular subject, and it's so rampant that one would think that we would, well, of course not. They're not going to talk about it on TV now, are they? Okay, so is Dave with us?
The technical difficulty. Much better.
Oh, good. Well, I guess we've both had technical difficulties. Dave, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you for having me. Once again, it's always a pleasure.
The last time you were on, and I've learned so much more about this particular subject since talking with you. I think I learn something new every day. At least that's what my objectives are, my goals are.
Thank you.
But
I know you're on my email list.
Yes, so I am. Thank you for that.
Yeah, I have a large email list that I've compiled over the years, probably, you know, been working on it for well over a decade. It's just full of media, law enforcement, survivor advocate groups. And I like the information that I try to get out there. I mean, I don't have a copyright on my blog. And the reason why I don't have a copyright on my blog is because I think that it limits the flow of information that I'm giving. And so I tell everyone, just use whatever, you know, just don't write something and put my name to it, but you can always use whatever I write, because the information's no good unless people know it. And so I try to get it out there as much as I can. So I'm glad that you're learning a lot more about the situation.
Well, I'm learning about it from different sources also, and about different entities. And I have your book on Kindle. And when I first opened the book in the last couple of days, the first thing that the page that I was on when we last talked was the photos of Hummel Park, the main entrance to Omaha's Hummel Park. And then below that image is the pentagram inlaid in stone on the pavilion floor. And it just kind of shook me up, because I was looking at some other sites, some other images this past, well, in the past month, that are in Salt Lake City, that also has pentagrams. So I was, you don't know when you're going to run into a pentagram.
You really don't. And the thing about the pentagram that was in Hummel Park is that people have to understand this floor was, well, first of all, the pavilion was built by the Freemasons, which Hummel Park and Forest Lawn Cemetery, about 3.5 minutes away from each other, completely in the boondocks. Nobody, if you went from one to the other, no one would see you go from one to the other. And the Hummel or Forest Lawn Cemetery not only is a big Freemason cemetery, but they have a 7-8 foot statue of a Freemason, with all of the graves with the Mason symbols, which, I mean, pentagrams are all over the thing, you know? But when they built the pavilion in Hummel Park, which is where a lot of the child sacrifices that I was forced to endure happened, the Freemasons built that. And we're not taught, when you hear a pentagram in the floor, this is not drawn. This was laid by stone. The floor is stone, and it was cut out specifically. So this is, I mean, you can go there today and still see it, because it's lasted. And as strange as it sounds, if you look at the Washington Monument and that whole area, people have taken an aerial view of that whole area with the Lincoln Memorial and the Washington Monument and all of that. And lo and behold, it's missing one section, but it's a pentagram. The roads are laid out, and the place is laid out so that if you look at it from the sky, an aerial view, it isn't a pentagram. There's one piece missing, but the rest of it's all there. And so, you know, you see a lot. That's, you know, it was funny, because I was just talking to another survivor the other day. And we were talking about Bohemian Grove, which lots of people know they have that Moloch statue, and they're doing child sacrifices. I mean, even their cremation of care, they burn an effigy of a child during the cremation of care. And so they're, you know, obviously, and then you have that ranch that Scalia was murdered at, and it's connected to the Bohemian Grove. And they had pictures of the inside of that ranch, and all these devil statues all over the place. And so it makes me wonder if Bohemian Grove and this ranch that Scalia was murdered at are two places of a collection of places that will form a pentagram, because it seems to be coming up all over the place. And so I'm wondering if there are other places just like the Bohemian Grove, just like this ranch that Scalia was killed at, that nobody knows about. Because nobody knew about this ranch until Scalia ended up dead there.
Sure.
So,
and I hate to even say that he was murdered, because I think he got what he deserved.
Well, as you know, I'm heavily connected to the survivor community. And an old-time investigator that is old school and is actually on the good side, a man by the name of Dave Valentine, came forward and said that they would not release the sex of the 13-year-old who slit Scalia's throat.
Wow.
That's the reason why they didn't have an autopsy.
Sure.
Because no matter what happens, you can't hide that someone got their throat slit. And from what I understand, Scalia was there to have sex with this 13-year-old boy. It is a boy. Scalia is one of my abusers. I know exactly what he's like and what he likes, or what he did like. And so what I'm assuming is that he raped a 13-year-old boy. Somehow the boy got something and was able to strike back at Scalia. And Scalia ended up dead. And that's why all of these weird stories, like he had a pillow over his face, you know? With as many conspiracy theorists, and I use that term incredibly loosely because I find that most people who are called conspiracy theorists, there's another word for them, it's called critical thinkers. And, that, you know, why would they, with all the conspiracy people out there, why would they even say that there was a pillow over his face?
I think
so obvious.
I'm sorry, but I,
go ahead.
I think
no.
they create all these stories to obfuscate the truth, so you don't know quite what happened. And they just you know, blow it up and give you all these theories to hide the truth.
I mean, I'm taking some heat from some people because people cannot understand that after Franklin, which was in 87, our government got involved, and not only, I mean, obviously they infiltrated the bad side, but they have also infiltrated the good side. And so you have these people who are supposedly good guys whose stories are so outlandish that it makes everybody just dismiss everything. A good example, and I mentioned earlier on in the week that I kind of wanted to mention this. Perfect example, a woman by the name of Noreen Gosh. And Noreen Gosh is the mother of Johnny Gosh. Johnny Gosh was abducted in West Des Moines. He was abducted, he was one of three paper boys in West Des Moines that was abducted within a year and a half. What's notable about Johnny Gosh, how people will most remember him, is that he was one of two of the first children on the milk carton, on the milk cartons. Ian Patz, a child that was abducted in New York, he was the other one. And so we have this woman now. I take a lot of heat because I don't like, nor do I at all trust this woman. From my personal experience with the woman, that she's directly working for the bad side. And I've thought about, there's so much that I could talk about, but the one thing that I want to point out, since you brought up this, they throw out these stories that are crazy.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why I focused on Noreen Gosh is because somehow or other, her son's abduction in West Des Moines, Iowa, has become synonymous with the Franklin Credit Union and what was going on in Omaha. And there are, the stories don't even make sense. And if you watch Noreen's interviews, and there's a lot of them on YouTube, her stories continuously change. And in fact, she, in the last month, she's been on Coast to Coast twice and has told conflicting stories on Coast to Coast. And the person who informed me about Coast to Coast said that, they had never dealt, they had never once touched Johnny Gosch or the Omaha thing once. And now in the last 2 months, they've had Noreen Gosch on twice.
That's interesting.
And so, but, Noreen Gosch is a chaos maker. And a good example of what I'm talking about is this whole story about Jeff Gannon. Jeff Gannon was a male prostitute. Nobody knew who he was. Nobody knew where he came from. Nobody knew anything about him other than the fact that he was being allowed into the White House in, as a press person, and that George Bush Sr. would often give him the first question, and nobody knew who he was. And so when it came out, questions about this guy, and then especially when it came out that he was a male prostitute, why is a male prostitute in the George Bush Sr. White House press room, and why does he get the first question? And who is this guy, and where did he come from?
Right.
And so what they did was, all of a sudden, Jeff Gannon, people that Noreen, or people connected with Noreen Gosch, all of a sudden started to go and say, Jeff Gannon was Johnny Gosch, the abducted Johnny Gosch that had been abducted years ago. There was a mind control victim, and now he's working for George Bush as a press person. And so all these stories, all these weird stories that surround the Johnny Gosch situation started to come to the forefront. And of course, what they did was they took precedent. So now people aren't talking about Jeff Gannon, this weird prostitute who's in the George Bush White House as a media person. All of a sudden it came all about Johnny Gosch. And the stories, all right, I mean, Noreen Gosch has wrapped everything. I mean, Michael Aquino, who was my personal handler, he's well known as Colonel Michael Aquino, founder of Temple of Set. Noreen Gosch has basically said that Johnny Gosch was sold to him. Well, what's happened is that this whole Johnny Gosch story has encompassed all of this child trafficking and all of this weird stuff that was involved with Omaha.
Oh.
So when you start talking about Omaha, you ultimately start talking about Johnny Gosch and all of their and all of their stuff.
Okay, got it.
Johnny, one of the interesting things about it is that Noreen Gosch went on the Michael Corbin show, and on the Michael Corbin show, she specifically stated that after Johnny was kidnapped and she divorced from her husband, who she is accusing of selling Johnny, their son, neither she nor her family knew where John was and had absolutely no way to contact him. I know that that's a blatant lie. And the reason why I know that that's a blatant lie is because I've written a letter to John Gosch. And the only only way I could have done that, Noreen Gosch herself gave me John Gosch's address. And so how are you telling everyone you don't know where he is, and yet you gave me his address? And I was thinking about it this morning before this interview, and I started to think about it, and I thought, you know, humans have a tendency to look at ourselves in our own personal perspective. I mean, all of our worlds are about us. You know, my world is about me, your world is about you. So I always thought about it, oh, she gave me the address. But then I took it away and started to look at it and thought, how many other weird people has she met online that she'd given that poor man's address to?
Dave, we do have a 3-minute break. We'll be right back in 3 minutes. Our first guest today is David Schurter. He is the author of Rabbit Hole, A Satanic Ritual Abuse Survivor's Story. His website is davidschurter.com. And, that's very interesting, interesting perception. And I think that you're right on that, somehow, her story, her son's story, has commandeered the entire movement, or the entire, you know, yeah, I guess you would call it, what would you call it?
It definitely is a movement, because survivors don't have much of a voice, and, I mean, never have. It came down in the 80s, and then we had the False Memory Syndrome Foundation, which is a CIA-based group, come forward and feed everybody the term satanic panic and false memories.
Okay, so people do have, they forget. They actually forget in order to save their sanity.
The thing about it is that how many times have you just had little things in your life that made you uncomfortable that you avoided thinking about? You know, just for a normal person, I mean, how many times have you had things that you'll prevent yourself from thinking about because it makes you uncomfortable? Now, consider being raped, tortured, sold, forced to murder kids, forced to, you know, all kinds of the most bizarre torture you've ever had. And people wonder where all this came from, but you have to understand, after World War II, it's a fact, a confirmed fact, that we brought all of those Nazi scientists over to America and helped them set up shop. The reason why was because we were in the middle of the Cold War, and we didn't want Russia getting the information that they had gotten out of the camps. And even though the experiments were horrible, yes, they were, but it wasn't like they weren't without their results. And so we brought over all of the scientists, and now, if that's not bad enough, the FBI has released documentation that Hitler didn't die in the bunker.
Well, I was just talking to a friend of mine, Jim Perloff. He sent me an email, and I've done a lot of research on Germany, World War II, and so we probably have different perceptions about that. And Operation Paperclip, certainly they did bring a lot of people over here under duress.
I don't believe they were under duress. I mean, when you consider that our NASA program is designed and was set up by two Nazi scientists.
Well, so, if there is such a thing as a NASA program. But anyway, I think we do have different perceptions.
That's the wonderful thing about it. Yeah, exactly. That's the wonderful thing about it. When I tell people things, I don't want you or anyone to just take what I'm saying at face value and as gospel any more than I want you to take anybody else at gospel. That's people will talk about what it's like to be an American. Well, the pursuit of education and knowledge, that was a fundamental part of being an American. And all I ask for is that people do their own research. Go out, start looking into things, and don't take at face value what you're being told, because a lot of the stuff from Franklin, another good example of Franklin and how everything is distorted. You can't talk about Franklin without John DeCamp's name coming up and his book, The Franklin Scandal, or I don't remember what it's called, but it's like...
Cover-up.
Cover-up, that's it. Nick Bryant wrote The Franklin Scandal, which is just another version that's even more watered down than DeCamp's book. But de Camp is not a good guy in this. He was directly connected to the Phoenix program. And you can look at what happened
Dave,
at the
Dave,
Frank.
we do have a 3-minute break. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back. This is Deanna. And our first guest today is David Schurter. And his website is davidschurter.com. And you had mentioned the false memory syndrome. And I think that, and you said that that was just a creation of the CIA.
Deanna, I'm having an issue because I'm catching every three words.
Oh, I'm sorry.
There we go. That's better. Whatever you're doing is way better.
Okay. Gosh, I'm not sure what was going on. Anyway, you were talking about the false memory syndrome, that it was a movement, an operation that was controlled by the CIA in order to debunk the people who were saying, hey, I remember that my father did this or my uncle did that. And so tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, back in the 80s, late 80s and early 90s, we had a rash of parents throughout the entire country coming forward claiming that their children were being satanically, ritually abused and sexually assaulted in their daycares. And it became quite a concern. Now, we have an easy way to focus on how it went away is the McMartin trial. The McMartin trial was a preschool. It was one of seven daycares in the area that was called out for doing satanic ritual abuse. It was the longest and most costly court case in America at its time. And the tunnels that the children spoke about being raped in and being forced to murder animals and all of that, those tunnels weren't found until after the trial. They had torn down McMartin, and their a group got permission to do a 3-day archaeological dig. They not only found the tunnels, but they found animal bones and satanic relics. So the question for me always has been, how did the longest and most costly court trial in American history miss the tunnels, which was a fundamental part, as far as I'm concerned, of this case? And so the only way that that could have happened is if they had been kept out of the trial. And so McMartin was used to close everything down. The False Memory Syndrome Foundation was formed. It was formed by the CIA. It consisted of all these rich white parents who had been accused of sexually abusing their children by their children. The only person who didn't fit this paradigm was a founder by the name of Ralph Underwager. And he actually, at the time the False Memory Foundation Syndrome Foundation was built or set up, he went on to a UK magazine called Paddica and proceeded to tell them how great it was for children to have sex with adults and how society needed to get over itself, that having sex with adults was great. Now, the interesting part about this whole situation is that, yes, we have this all happening in America in the late 80s and the early 90s. And they said, it was a social hysteria, satanic panic. The story doesn't even make sense. People read a book called Michelle Remembers, and then that somehow spurred all of the therapists in the country to convince their clients that either they or their children had been satanically ritually abused, and then compelled them to go to the law enforcement, and it was this big hysteria. And everyone was going crazy. But at the same time this was happening in America, it was also happening in both the UK and Australia. And you have to remember that late 80s, early 90s, we didn't have the internet. Home computers were just starting to become a thing. And so how did all of these therapists get to, first of all, how did they get together to cause this hysteria, this global hysteria, and why? You know, how and why? And now we know, looking back, that the UK actually covered up their abuse allegations. And without a doubt, they covered them up. They don't want to investigate them because they're saying they're historical. But my question is, if these allegations are so bogus, first of all, what are the allegations that were so bogus? Two, who were involved in these allegations? And three, and probably most important, if these allegations were so bogus and they were based on such a hysteria, why did the UK government go through all this time, effort, and money to cover these up? At the same time that Ralph Underwager was going on to Paddica magazine in the UK, UK elected officials in their government were also advocating at the exact same time for the age of consent to be lowered to 10. And so we have all of that going on. Then you have the Wood Commission and the Australia, and Fiona Barnett is a great person to actually look into for that, because I was raised in this cult to believe that I was the Antichrist. She, down in Australia, was taught the female version. I didn't even realize there was a female version, because what I grew up was so misogynistic, I didn't realize there was any kind of female side to it. She's the female side. And what's interesting is that she has a documentary out there called Candy Girl. You can go to YouTube, just Candy Girl. If you watch that video and what she says, then you can go to my YouTube station, and I have a documentary out there called David's Story, The Childhood Ritual Abuse of David Schroeder. The interesting part about these documentaries is that although hers was posted first, my documentary wasn't filmed. Right? My documentary was filmed like 3.5 years before. We just had never gotten around to releasing it. And so if you look at Fiona Barnett's documentary, Candy Girl, and my documentary, David's Story, we didn't even know each other. We had never met. We had no clue the other person existed. I filmed mine 3 years before hers, and she filmed, and yet our stories are pretty much, in many ways, identical. And that's what you'll find with survivors. None of us know each other. We've never met. We have no clue who the other person is. And yet, the experiences of our abuse as children is remarkably similar. We can say, we say the same things because it was pretty much the same abuse. And
and these are the people that have identified themselves as survivors. I mean, there are a lot of children who believe that they're alone. They feel like they are an isolated case. And talk about it.
Every abused child feels like they're alone. No, regardless of this kind of trauma or any other kind of trauma, every abused child has a tendency to feel like they're alone, like it's them against the entire world. And in America alone, there are 48 million survivors. Doing the exact same thing that we talked about at the very beginning, they are living their lives and doing everything they can, almost obsessively sometimes, not to think about what happened to them as children. They don't talk about it. They don't tell anybody about it. They don't even want to face it. And so we have this, and that's that is one of the malevolent parts of this, because these perpetrators know how victims react. They know what they're like. You know, I was talking to a woman who her daughter, she knows that her daughter has been abused. And her daughter has actually, 14 years old, come out and started to talk to, they've talked to a lawyer, there's a court battle, a custody battle going on. So this girl actually came forward. And then my friend was just like, well, I wonder when she's going to come talk to me. And I told my friend, she's never going to come talk to you. And she said, what do you mean? And I'm just like, you were abused. When did you tell your parents? She said, never. I said, that's right. And neither did I. And neither do most kids. You never talk about it. You don't tell anybody. You don't want anyone to know. It's humiliating and embarrassing. And, you know, and life is rough enough. Who wants the trouble?
Sure.
And so...
Yeah. Dave, let me ask you a question. There are people who don't remember what happened to them. I'm in the middle of a book right now about a woman that was abused starting at the age of 5. She did not to the age of, 5, 6, and 7. And then she grew up and went to college, and then she started having a lot of very, very strange physical problems. And she did not remember her abuse, but she was just, she would get violently ill. And then she went to a doctor, and, well, she went to several doctors. And she did have children. And after she'd had had a couple of children, her doctor, her gynecologist, talked about her incredible scarring and assumed that it was from her, from childbirth. And she said, oh no, I didn't have any problems with tearing at childbirth. And he told her, well, you've got serious scarring, tremendous scarring. And, but she had all kinds of physical problems. Pain, the pain in her back and in her hands, and particularly in the vaginal area, just unexplained pain. And she didn't know the cause of it until she had a flashback. Now, is that similar to what others might experience?
That is very similar. You read stories of people who get into accidents, car accidents, good example, a car accident, who get into the car accident, who can remember up to the car accident, but can't remember the car accident itself because of the trauma. And the brain, the human brain, does everything it can to protect the body. And so it will file those away so you can't get a hold of it, so you're not further traumatized. Think about how traumatic being raped and tortured is as a child, and you don't even have the capabilities of understanding what exactly is happening. And the reason why they have focused on this dissociation with this whole satanic panic is because that's what happens. The reason why a lot of children who grow up who were raped as kids don't remember it is because dissociation took over during the rape. So to them, in their mind, someone else got raped, not them. They didn't get raped. I was just talking to a friend of mine who said, you know, she was talking about she would have friends over at night and her dad would hurt them. And the therapist started to talk to her and said, so your dad let your friends come over at night? And she said, yeah. And she said, and he would hurt them. He would rape them. And she said, yeah. And she said, and so the therapist asked her, so where were you in this? And what it came out with is that her dad never had any friends over. It was her who was getting raped.
Wow.
but she remembered it as her friends because she dissociated enough away from herself that she objectified herself. And that's what happens with trauma. That's the reason why you can beat and rape someone and create the Stockholm Syndrome in their head within 3 days. Stockholm Syndrome gets you to not only do you identify with your abuser, but you'll fight to the death for your abuser. Patty Hearst, perfect example. These are all conditions that we know exist. And yet, it has been so discombobulated when it comes to children and how they respond. And so you can't, you know, if you are doing things, if your life is out of control and you're doing things that you don't understand why, that's a key. That's where you need to focus, is why are you doing those things? What is causing you to do those things? And, I mean, it doesn't have to be SRA, it doesn't have, or satanic ritual abuse, it doesn't have to be MK Ultra abuse. Trauma is trauma. And so therefore, if you're, my trauma, as bad as it is, does not negate anybody else's trauma. Yes, my trauma as a child was very intense and extreme. But my trauma, as extreme as my trauma was as a child, my experiences don't negate anybody else's sense of trauma. Your trauma is your trauma. And if you're doing things that are usually self-destructive, because it's very rare for abused kids to come out of it and be, you know, focusing on the good things for themselves. So if your life is chaotic and you're doing self-destructive things, then you need to look back at yourself and figure out, chances are you are being controlled by a past trauma that you're just not wanting to face. And you just need to be open and strong enough to face that trauma. Now, with this trauma conversation, I do want to tell everybody, there is an amazing conference coming up in Seattle in October. It's October 6th through the 8th, I believe. It starts on the 6th, which is a Friday. We'll get back to it at the next commercial.
All righty. We'll be right back in 3 minutes. And our guest, our first guest today is David Schurter, and his website is davidschurter.com. And you're going to tell us about the conference in Seattle, and that is going to be at the, let's see.
Oh, Deanna, I'm having the same issue.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not
there. You go.
What's going on. Okay.
Sorry.
Anyway, the conference in Seattle, the website is igdid.org. Is that correct? Or no?
It is igdid.org. It's the Seattle Trauma and Dissociation Conference. It is an amazing conference. Like I said, this is its third year. It has grown exponentially. The focus for the conference is trauma-informed perspectives. And so basically what this conference is it talks about trauma. What is trauma? It talks about how trauma affects the brain, how it affects the brain neurologically, how it affects it with psychology. And the best part about this conference is that not only does it deal with those, but it also gives you some solutions and some ideas on how to combat your trauma and take your life back. It has the conference is set up by a woman by the name of Pat Goodwin. She is one of the founders of Ivory Garden, which is the longest standing survivor support group online. I think it's been around for about 11 years now. She started to do conferences 2 years ago. Like I said, this is the third. Speakers include Dr. Colin Ross, amazing gentleman.
Absolutely.
For those of you
who, multiple times.
I actually am starting a new radio show on Awake Radio. I got talked into it, and Colin Ross has agreed to have me interview him for 2 hours.
Wonderful.
I'm very excited. I was very honored. But for those of you who would like to know more about the False Memory Syndrome Foundation, Lynn Crook is one of our, or not one of ours, but one of the presenters. And she has just written a book, the history of the False Memory Syndrome Foundation.
Ah.
And she's going to be releasing her book at this conference. It's the book release that she's doing. And so I believe it's Dr. I'm not exactly sure who it is, and I'm probably going to get yelled at by Pat for this. But a really renowned doctor is going to do a question and answer about self-harm, because survivors have a tendency to do self-harming. Now, this does not just include cutting or burning, which is what we consider, you know, self-harm, but some of us eat too much. Some of us work too much. Some of us, you know, anything that you're doing in your life that is causing you problems and isn't beneficial to you, that's self-harm.
Wow. Okay, Dave, we're at the top of the hour. We will be right back in 3 minutes.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth. Truth, 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 truth.
Scherker. He is the author of Rabbit Hole, A Satanic Ritual Abuse Survivor's Story. His website is davidscherker.com. His YouTube channel is youtube.com/user/davidscherker1, the numeral one. And you were talking right before we went to the break about, well, you were talking about the conference that is going to take place in Seattle, and that is going to have that's going to be in October. Is it October? Let's see.
October 6th.
Yes.
October 6th,
okay.
Or the 8th.
Great. And people can sign up for that. There's going to be some fabulous speakers, and so if you're anywhere in that vicinity or have an interest in this, which I think a lot of people should have an interest in this, then I hope that that you will attend.
There's 16 CEUs offered, so if you're looking for further education units, the conference itself has been approved for, the whole conference has been approved, so it's 16 credit units.
Oh,
CEUs.
Terrific.
This conference is designed for not only survivors of trauma, but clinicians, teachers, social workers, anybody who wants to identify trauma in their clients and understand trauma. If you're a vet suffering from PTSD, this is your conference. It's going to be held at the Radisson. It's a smaller venue than where it's been in the last 2 years. This was done on purpose because one of the major complaints for the last 2 years was that the place was too big. And people couldn't find each other. And so this conference, because the Radisson is so much smaller from what I understand, the whole conference is taking over the whole hotel. So it'll all be conference goers staying at the hotel for the most part. And so it'll be much easier. It's a much nicer, you know.
Super.
The conference itself gives you a chance to talk to other survivors. It gives you a chance to talk to the clinicians and the speakers, because they're all very eager to talk with people, answer questions. It's an excellent find this work valuable, but can't attend the conference yourself, we are doing a fundraiser at igdid.org for survivors. And so if you can't contribute, but you have a few dollars that you could throw at it, you can go to igdid.org, make a donation. Now realize that Ivory Garden is an official non-for-profit. And so whatever donation you get, you will get a receipt for, and you can claim it on your taxes. We all know how we love those
sure.
claims to save us from our taxes. And so anybody who helped, you know, there are a lot of survivors out there. I mean, let's be real. There's a lot of survivors out there that are homeless, but there are a lot of survivors who are kept, who are just down in the ground and can't afford this conference. And we're not just talking the conference. This goes for helping fund their hotel rooms. It goes and helps fund their flights. We're trying to do as much as we can for survivors because I'm Pat is a dear friend of mine. That's why when you hear me say our conference, it's not my conference. But Pat is one of my dearest friends. Because it's for survivors, I kind of feel connected to this whole thing, even though I'm not anywhere officially connected to this at all. I will be head of security, though, so I will be there. We are making this conference as safe and as comfortable for anybody out there. And so it'll be very safe, and it'll just be a lot of fun. Last year, on Saturday night, there was a dinner and dancing, and people were just, it was a hoot. So, it'll be a really good time. It won't be this heavy. I mean, yes, the topic is heavy. We're talking about trauma, but because of the way Pat has structured and her, background, she has two masters. And she has a degree in psychology. And her background was as a special eds teacher. And so when you hear survivor conference, you think survivor stories and everyone's going to come up and there's no survivor stories. What it all is an educational conference that talks about trauma, gives people perspectives. Not every one of the speakers agrees with all the other speakers. There's no objective. It's just we're trying to get the information out so that people can make their own decisions to their right. own health care.
Right.
And yeah. You can't live in this day and age and not have some sort of trauma. I mean, unless you're very lucky.
Oh, that's true. Even, you know, things that we consider maybe minor. Might affect somebody else very much. Now, you were talking about self-harm. You mentioned cutting and burning, and you didn't mention being anorexic. You did mention people eating too much or bulimia. Those are all very, self-harm.
I probably didn't mention anorexia only because that's a personal thing to me. I spent a lot of years having eating and sleeping disorders, which is common for trauma.
Right.
And it wasn't so much, I mean, anorexics, you hear about, they have this thing about food and you know, it seems all strange. With my anorexia, it was just, the stress was so heavy with me. Some people eat and some people don't eat at all. And I was the latter. I didn't eat at all. And in fact, on my 20th birthday, I'll never forget, I had a birthday party. And I had a friend of mine who had completely tortured my hair. And so my hair was cut probably a fourth of an inch from my head because he screwed my hair up so bad.
Wow.
And so I had this party, and one of my attendees walked up to me and said, told me, made the comment in front of everybody, "You look look like you've just been released out of a concentration camp. And it ended the party. I mean, it was something I never forgot.
Sure.
But, you know, all of that is in there. Not eat, you know, anorexia, bulimia, overeating, overworking. Anything that you're doing that hurts you, that you're trying to use as an escape from something, and we all do. I mean, that's why movies are such a big thing. We always like to look for escape. Human
sure.
beings, especially now. And so, you know, and that's with this self-harm, you know, self-harming, what you find is with trauma survivors, you know, that, okay, well, I'll start eating more, but then I'm going to start smoking. Okay, I'm going to quit smoking, but I'm going to start drinking now. You know, what ends up happening with a lot of trauma survivors is that they just replace one self-harm activity with another self-harm activity. And so the contention of the conference is that in order to effectively deal with trauma, you must first face your trauma to the point where you can understand the trauma. And many trauma survivors have a tendency to look at themselves as, I did this. This is my fault. You know, and that's common, not just with kids who get abused, but I mean, look at how many times women get raped and then they don't report it because they tell themselves they put themselves in the situation and they deserved it. Nobody deserves trauma. If you are victimized by somebody, you did nothing to cause that person to victimize you. They made the conscious choice themselves to victimize you.
Now we're talking about deliberate abusing of children. We're not talking, I mean, everybody hurts somebody's feelings, sometimes every day. So, I mean, there are perpetual victims who love the victim card. They play the victim card all the time to get money, to get attention, to get whatever it is they're after. But when you're talking about children, let me just ask a couple of questions. Do children ever try to protect the abuser? Number one.
Okay, say that again. I'm having issues.
Okay. Do children ever try to protect the abuser?
Okay, I got you. Children ever try.
Oh, I'm sorry. Do children ever try to protect their abuser?
Their abuser?
Yes.
All the time. I protected my parents till the very end. And in fact, it is, you know, it is not honorable for me to say this, but I didn't even start trying to do what I've been doing for the last, 15 years until after my father died. And, it was because I did not want pain and anguish to be visited upon my parents, who were my abusers. They were the ones who sold me. They were the ones who opened the door for everything. And so, again, we talked about the Stockholm Syndrome, and the Stockholm Syndrome, it can happen to anybody. Patty Hearst was an adult when she got abducted. And after they did what they did to her, we all know she robbed a bank for the people's liberation. She joined her abusers and mm-hmm. fought with them. And that's part of the Stockholm Syndrome, is that you start to... You identify less with yourself and more with your abuser. And for children, when it comes to their parents, that doesn't even need trauma. Kids have a tendency to defend their parents. You know, they might get mad at their parents and they might talk some crap about their parents. But boy, see what happens if you start talking crap about their parents.
Sure.
Most kids will stand right on up and defend them. And
now,
so,
this cutting and burning and that kind of thing, is that usually associated with sexual abuse, Or could it be another trauma, like the loss of a parent or the some other loss?
The thing about it is that we're all individuals.
Okay.
And so since we're all individuals, what traumatizes you may not traumatize me. And if you are traumatized and I am traumatized, chances are we probably won't be traumatized by the same thing. And more so, we're not going to respond the same. We're two totally different people. That's why trauma is so vital to understand, because each of us deals with trauma differently. And, you know, that's why you can have people go to war, and many come back with PTSD, but some come back just fine. They don't get PTSD. It's all part of the makeup of our personalities, what determines it. And it's all different. And so, and again, like I said, trauma is trauma. And so you don't have to be horribly sexually abused to be a cutter. If you have something, especially because cutting generally starts and originates in childhood, and especially the teen years. So if you're cutting and burning yourself, it doesn't mean that you had type A abuse or type B abuse or type C abuse. Chances are it just means you were abused. You had trauma in your past. Mm-hmm. And you're using the self-harming to get away from that trauma. And so the only thing that is the same about that are the avoidance techniques. The trauma doesn't have to be the same. The effects of the trauma doesn't have to be the same. But if you're doing self-harm, chances are you are trying to escape from something. But, I mean, I'm sure, Deanna, you've read as much as I have. In some respects, emotional and verbal abuse can be just as bad, if not more so, than the physical abuse.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And so abuse is abuse. Abuse causes trauma. And I will tell you, as a kid, I much preferred to have the crap beat out of me than to sit and listen to my parents berate me for an hour. And because the beating, you can deal with it, and then you just get over it.
Sure.
You know? But the words, the words, those can last forever.
They do last forever. Now, is abuse generational? Now, the book that I'm reading, this woman wrote a book, her name is Martha Beck. She wrote a book about her abuse. Her father was incredibly intelligent, had a very high IQ. And he was abused by his mother. He also participated in the war. And warfare has a tendency to dehumanize people. But then he married a woman that was also abused. And apparently she suffered depression. She stayed in bed for days at a time, didn't get dressed for days at a time, and had all of these, you know, serious things going on that were never addressed. And then the father began abusing one of his 8 children at the age of 5 and didn't abuse the other children. He did beat them, but he sexually abused the one daughter, beginning at the age of 5. And so, inasmuch as both the parents were abusers, is there a tendency for an abused previously abused parent to abuse a child?
Oh, yeah. And that's why they use the term breaking the cycle, because abuse begets abuse. You rarely see someone who has had a happy childhood and a happy life abuse their spouse. It's usually abuse that spurs it. And what ends up happening is your parents get abused by their parents, they abuse you, you abuse your kids. Because it is a human condition that we do what we know. You can't do what you don't know. And so if you know abuse and you know that kind of behavior, chances are one of two things will either happen. You'll either gravitate to that as an abuser and start to abuse other people, or worse, and I think more common, you gravitate to that situation as a victim. And so what ends up happening is that people who have trauma in their past, people who have had lots of trauma in their past, I know that I'm guilty of this as well. We have a tendency to choose bad relationships. Not because we're bad people, not because we're stupid, but because you gravitate to what you know. And so therefore, if you have a life where your spouse is abusive and your job is abusive and your children might be abusive and people out in public might be abusive, as much as people hate to say this, you're the only constant. And so therefore, if you're being abused by everybody, chances are you need to set up some boundaries and stop that.
Okay, Dave, we're going to a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest first 2 hours today is David Scherter. His website is davidscherter.com. He is the author of Rabbit Hole, A Satanic Ritual, Abuse Survivor's Story. Now, there's a difference between satanic ritual abuse and, can I say, plain old sexual abuse, which sounds like I'm minimizing the effect. I mean, you can be sexually abused once or twice.
Satanic ritual abuse, Deanna, we're having the same issue. Sorry, every time we come back, I have a hard time. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
Way better.
Is satanic ritual abuse different than sexual abuse, regular or periodic?
Yeah. Yes. Satanic ritual abuse denotes rituals of a religious sort, and obviously Satanism denotes satanic ritual abuse. And so it's basically the same abuse, only it has this religious element moved in. And satanic ritual abuse is no different of an indoctrination than, say, what was going on with that FDLS cult with Warren Jeffries, I think his name was. And he was a part of a Mormon offshoot.
Yes.
And that was not satanic ritual abuse, but that was abuse that had a religious context to it. Now, there is a difference between Satanism and Luciferianism, is that Satanists are just basically against Christianity. They mock God. They don't believe in God. A lot of Satanists will claim that they are atheists, even though I'm not quite sure how you can say you're atheist and Satanist at the same time. It just seems like an oxymoron to me. Mm-hmm. But Satanism is different from Luciferianism in that Luciferianism is worship of the Antichrist. They believe in a war with heaven. They believe in a demonic takeover, and they believe that because they're on the side of these demons, that they are going to inherit everlasting life and power and money, you know, basically all those things that
there's predominant symbols and things throughout the United States. that are very Luciferian.
And those are, from what I know of the situation, those things that you're seeing are not satanic. They're Luciferian.
Right.
They are to promote the Antichrist. And this group has been trying to design Earth to be fit for a demonic takeover.
Right.
And look around. I think they've done a stellar job.
And they are associated with Freemasonry.
Freemasonry. The thing about it is that there's really Freemasonry and all of those things, they're all connected to the same beast. Someone termed all of this stuff the octopus. And I disagree with that because it's not an octopus. What you're dealing with is a spider web. And so, like Noreen Gosh, it is easy to get caught on that piece of the spider web. And so all of a sudden, all you do is focus about Johnny Gosch and what Noreen has had to say and all of that. I just had someone who's listening to this program who just told me that Noreen Gosch never came out and said that John, her ex-husband, sold Johnny and worked with Paul Bonacci to kidnap Johnny. Johnny was abducted in 89, and he just sent me a video of a YouTube that Noreen Gosch is saying that she didn't know about this whole John selling Johnny until 2009. So she's worked hand in hand with Paul Bonacci for 10 years, but she didn't know that key information, working with the guy who supposedly helped abduct her son. And so what ends up happening is you get caught in these strands, and they are so full of BS that you can't focus on anything else.
Right.
And so what ends up ultimately happening is that people just dump it all and walk away from the whole kit and caboodle and ignore all of it. And that's what it's designed for.
All righty. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but we'll be right back in 3 minutes. All righty, welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest is David Schurter. His website is David Schurter, and he's the author of Rabbit Hole, A Satanic Ritual Abuse Survivor's Story. You mentioned Warren Jeffs. Warren Jeffs did have, or... Yeah, I guess he doesn't now because he's in prison, but he did have very significant connections to Freemasonry. A question. Is wearing a bow tie significant to, is that some sort of sign that just tell people that you have certain persuasion?
Okay, I didn't even get that. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm trying. I really am.
I'm sorry. You mentioned Warren Jeffs.
Right.
And Warren Jeffs had connections to Freemasonry. Now, he's in prison now, so his connections are probably pretty limited. But he did have very, very strong connections to Freemasonry.
We are finding that this is all connected, and it's all connected to our elite. Jerry Sandusky, great example.
Yes.
We all know who Jerry Sandusky was, and we all heard the reports when he was getting investigated and going to court about his child foundation, the Second Mile High Club, where he was selling children to elite pedophiles, and that this was a huge group. Now, interestingly enough, Larry King sang at George Bush Sr.'s inauguration when he was first elected president. This is a big thing because Larry King got busted for Franklin. Well, I contend...
The Larry King? No, a different
one. Not the radio guy.
The other guy. Okay.
Yeah, he's a black... Larry King that I'm speaking about with Franklin was a black gentleman.
Right.
And so, I won't. Gentleman is kind of overstating it, but...
A male. Adult male.
Yeah, he was a black male. And so he's not, you know, obviously Larry King is like this ancient old white guy. Brilliant.
Right. But I just wanted to have you make that distinction.
Yeah. And so the party that Larry King sang at with George Bush, both Jerry Sandusky and Joe Paterno were at that exact party at that exact same time.
Oh, it's just a coincidence, Dave.
What?
It's just a coincidence.
Yeah, well, and see, that's just it. I mean, we have these things. We have all of this stuff that happens over and over and over. But when you have such a series of coincidences, it transcends from being a coincidence and becomes more of an established pattern.
Absolutely. Yeah,
and that's what we have, is an established pattern of behavior. Yes, they deny their behavior, but what, you know, what perp usually comes forward and says, yeah, you know, I did it, every once in a while, but usually they have a good plea deal.
Sure.
And so,
now, you did not go public with your experiences until your father died, but you did write him a long letter. Did you ever talk to him about this abuse, person to person, face to face?
Yes. That's how I know that he put the remains of dead children in his bedroom closet that he completely rebuilt. I also know that he called Noreen Gosh and told her that he had committed horrible crimes against children. And I know that because Noreen herself told me that. And so my father, the result of my letter, this is why I tell people, unconditional love is not easy. It's not. It's not easy. And a lot of times when you are trying to give unconditional love, you get your hand slapped, and that's usually the minimum. It's very difficult. But I gave my parents unconditional love. I tried to help my parents in every way because I felt that my parents in many ways are very broken. Very evil, very misguided, but broken because of the abuse that they suffered as children.
So they suffered abuse also. Okay.
Oh, horrible abuse. Horrible abuse. Both of my parents were horribly abused, and I know that because I've talked to both of my parents. My mother actually came clean and just told me about her abuse, and my father and I confronted him about his abuse and got him to talk about it. And so, again, this is a generational thing, you know, and so unconditional love is very difficult, but I practiced unconditional love with my parents. Not that I wasn't angry with them. Not that I didn't absolutely hate them at points. Not that they didn't enrage me all the time. But I believe that the Ten Commandments given to us by God and the two given to us by Jesus Christ, which are, should be at the top of that list. Love God, love everyone else. And so I believe that. I have firm belief that those are commandments that should be followed. And honor your mother and father is the fifth commandment. And it doesn't mean you have to like your parents. It doesn't mean you have to agree with your parents. It doesn't even, you know, but really, when it comes down to it, when you hear someone talk about their parents and how bad they might hate their parents, if you listen closely, their hate is fueled by love and pain. They love their parents, but could never get close. And so they hate them to disguise the pain.
Well, I think that in order to feel pain caused by your parents, that you would actually have to love them, otherwise it wouldn't be painful.
That's exactly. And so I reached out to my dad. I wrote a letter. You talk about rabbit hole. there are people out there who, I mean, come on, let's be real. Unless you're the 0.01% of the 1%, none of us have a dime to our name. We're so busy trying to fight for our bills and feed ourselves that we don't have any spare money. And so for those of you who are interested in reading what I wrote, I suggest that you go to my blog, davidschroeder.com, and in the pages above, you will find a link that says extended version of Rabbit Hole. It was called Confessions of an Antichrist. Mm-hmm. What I wrote under the title Confessions of an Antichrist. It wasn't until I went to go get it published that that changed. And it was only because my publisher told me that if it had Antichrist on the front cover, no one was going to read it. And so it got switched. Yeah, they said that no one would read a book about the Antichrist. And so we switched it. But you can go read the extended version. You can read everything I wrote for free on my blog. And the difference between Rabbit Hole and Confessions is that with everything they cut out and everything they added in Rabbit Hole, which were a lot of news reports that validated what I was saying, Rabbit Hole is 64,000 words. And it's great, don't get me wrong. I was nominated for Book of the Year by a prestigious Indie Award book company. Didn't win, but I felt that being nominated for Book of the Year for my first book was quite an accomplishment. I was pretty happy with it.
Yes, exactly.
And, you know, and but Rabbit Hole is 130,000 words.
Wow.
Way longer and way more involved. And so if you want to read the extended version of every single thing that I wrote, just go to my blog, davidschroeder.com, and check it out. It's free, you know, and there's a lot of information. Now, I will tell everyone that we're going to do it in the next month, but we're so busy with this conference, it isn't going to happen until after October.
Sure.
But, Pat is, among other things, a brilliant web designer. And so I told her the cost of me helping her with the conference and being head of security is that after the conference, she has to sit down and help me revamp my blog.
Ah.
So that it's way more accessible to people. And, so that's coming. Because there's a lot. I mean, I've had my blog for years. Years upon years. I think I got my blog before I even published my book. And it's just all of my investigations, all of what I know of my family, everything I know about this whole, because people have a tendency to focus on the satanic aspect of this. I would prefer people to not focus on the satanic aspect of this, because even though the satanic aspect is more sensationalistic, yes it is, the key problem with all of this is the child abductions and child sex trafficking that is going on with all of this. These kids are being abducted, not necessarily to slaughter in some weird devil-worshipping ritual, but they are missing and exploited children. We'll tell you, one child in America is disappearing every 27 seconds.
Oh, my gosh.
The CPS, our Child Protective Services in America, has admitted they have lost tens of thousands of children that have just evaporated. They don't have a clue where they are. And so this is a huge child trafficking problem. The problems in the UK, it was all child trafficking. The problems in Australia that Fiona talks about, it was all child sex trafficking. And we know that there was a lot of sexual abuse going on with kids. Good golly, look at the Catholic Church. You know, it was going on and people were ignoring it and looking the other way, which is the only reason why it was able to go on like it did for centuries. You know, I wanted to say decades, but I'm not even sure decades is long enough.
I think it became more talked about more after 1965. Now, I recently saw the movie Spotlight, which was a fabulous movie, and certainly talked about the situation. But there are some groups, some churches, that do such a great job at damage control that the media just does not really talk about it or remains relatively silent.
Well,
and so
there's a documentary out there on Franklin and what happened in Omaha. It's on YouTube, and it's called Conspiracy of Silence. And I like that name because that's exactly the problem, is that all of this is a conspiracy of silence. The victims aren't talking. Those who know about the situation aren't talking. And those who are behind perpetrating this are definitely not talking. And so everyone is invested in silence. And I mean, the 80s, we got a good glimpse of our children being abused in the 80s, and now here we are, 2016, and the sexual trafficking of children is rampant. It's everywhere now.
And they're using the state governments, the Child Protective Services, to perpetuate this situation.
A good example of that would be the O'Donnell girls in Michigan. The O'Donnell girls were two 15-year-old twin girls, beautiful, amazingly dark-haired, beautiful. I believe someone was targeting them online. The reason why I say that is because they went on Snapchat, and one of them simply posted that they had tried marijuana for the first time ever. Wow, a 15-year-old trying marijuana. Wow, that's like something I've never heard of before. Have you?
No.
And yet, Child Protective Services were banging on that mother's door 45 minutes later. They arrested the girls. It has been a crazy ordeal. And now they have both girls in custody again. And they're sending them to Boys Town National Hospital. And so that's where they're getting sent. So they are targeting children online. And I know you get my emails. They right now, the biggest thing out there is the secret groups on Facebook. And there is this big push by this group of predators to set up all of these secret Facebook things. You have to be contacted. Then they tell you how great this group is. It's a secret group. But in order to join the group, and you don't even know what group you're joining when you do this, they require you to send them all of your personal information. Your name, your address, your phone number, where you work, all of that.
And children do this.
Not only children, Deanna, adults. They're targeting, right now there's this big push. They are targeting anybody with trauma. When I first started investigating this, I thought it was just focused in the DID world, the dissociative identity disorder, which used to call multiple personality.
Mm-hmm.
But what I found out, my investigator, who is actually researching this, he belongs now because he started it. He set up a fake profile, and he's involved with 70 secret groups on Facebook. And he's only been at it for 3 weeks. And they ask him all of his personal information. He has to give all of his personal information before they go. And what's happening, and you have to understand, the internet law, federal law, it dictates, unless your site is deemed adult and only for adults, anybody the age of 13 and above can come on your site legally. There is nothing preventing them. And so they are attracting these people and getting them going. A lot of these people have trauma. Now, the conversation that I was sent, that I watched, that I read through the screenshots that I was given, they were talking to someone telling them that they needed to put all of their parts in the light.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, we'll talk about this when we get back.
Yeah, we'll be right back. All right, welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest this first 2 hours has been David Schroeder. He is the author of Rabbit Hole, A Satanic Ritual Abuse Survivor Story. His website is davidschroeder.com. His YouTube is youtube.com/user/davidschroeder1. And to be sure and look into that conference, and the conference URL is igdid.org. Now, you were talking about Facebook. I've never trusted Facebook, and I'm thinking that maybe this was the initial objective of the creator. Because people
it's more of a dangerous place than I ever thought it was.
But people were used to sharing all this private information with Facebook because they thought, oh, you know, I'm just sharing with my friends. You are sharing with the world. You put something on Facebook, you know, it isn't just your friends.
Well,
the
problem with it is that you think you're sharing with your friends, and really all they are words on a screen. And you have no idea, really, who is typing those words on that screen. You have no idea who you're talking to. And we are very open. We're way more open than on the internet than we are in real life. If you had a complete stranger come up to you and ask you for your name and your address and your phone number and all of your personal information, you would say no. And yet, they have people who have done studies on the internet about this, and their conclusion is the majority of people online will give all that information up within the first 10 minutes.
Oh, my goodness.
And so you have, so what they're doing is that they're bringing these people, they're doing this weird form of therapy, and I use the word therapy loosely. Like I said, they're telling all these people who say that they have DID to put all of their parts into the light. And that's supposed to cure them. Well, it obviously doesn't cure them. I mean, if it was that easy, I think therapists would have been doing that how many years ago?
Sure.
And so, of course, the people will say, but I still have parts. Then this group who are involved with these secret groups tell the people those are bad parts and those parts need to be dealt with. And the only way for you to get rid of those bad parts is to kill those bad parts. So therefore, they're telling these very vulnerable, emotionally broken, sometimes very mentally unstable people, some of whom are underage children, that if they have trauma and this little putting their parts in the light doesn't work, then the only honorable thing they can do is to go kill themselves. And that's what they're doing. And nobody knows, because nobody can find these secret groups, because you can't find them unless you're invited to them.
Wow. Well, David, our time is up. Again, we've certainly been educated. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me, Deanna. And I will tell you, I'm going to be reaching out to you here soon because I want to hear what you have to say about the Holocaust. You've been great to me.
Okay.
Okay.
We'll do it. All righty. Take care.
All right. I'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
All righty. Bye-bye.